And another part of me was saying yes. But each person must undergo their own healing journey themselves. No one else can do it for them. It must be a personal journey of discovery, unique to each of us. Who am I to try to stand up on stage and tell people what to do? It's pure arrogance. And so my mind battled back and forth as I hid in the hallway waiting for Chopra to take the stage. Once he was safely on stage, I slipped into the seminar room and stood at the back to hear his talk on cellular healing. I'd heard it so many times before and had always found it freshly inspiring. But this time, I heard it with new ears, not as a wonderful theory or model of possibility, but as a statement of fact, a statement of my own experience. He was standing on stage confirming, from a scientific perspective, exactly how my tumor had left, saying it was possible to interrupt the memory stored in degenerative cells, and once the pattern was interrupted, that new healthy cells could replace them. Having made a life study of the successful survivors, he said he'd found that they had two things in common. One, they were able to get into the gap, get in touch with the silence of being, the infinite intelligence, the wisdom beyond the mind. Two, they were able to let go of memories stored at a cellular level. He told the story of a woman who had been given a heart-lung transplant and how she'd actually inherited the cell memories of the man who donated his organs. Upon waking up from the transplant operation, she found that she had a strong craving for chicken McNuggets and fries, even though she didn't even like them. Further investigation revealed that the donor had been on his way to McDonald's to have chicken McNuggets and fries and had died suddenly in a motor accident. Subsequently, she found many other memories coming back to her. Memories of this man's family and past girlfriends. Memories that had been stored in his heart and lung cells. When she met with his family privately and shared the memories that were coming up for her, they confirmed that all of the details checked out. She was literally experiencing his old memories as they were leaving her new heart cells. Chopra explained it quite elegantly, that these phantom memories get passed on from one cell generation to the next. He went on to say that the cells in the various organs of the body regenerate at different speeds. The liver cells take 6 weeks to regenerate, whereas the skin cells take only 3 to 4 weeks. When he said that you have all new skin every 3 or 4 weeks, I remembered my last trip to Hawaii and how in only 3 weeks my golden tan had almost completely faded away. He was right, all new skin. He went on to say that you get a whole new stomach lining in only 4 days. And more amazing than that, all your eye cells completely replicate every 2 days. That particular scientific statistic has always seemed almost incomprehensible to me. If you're like me, you're probably asking, how is it possible that you can have all new eyeballs in only 2 days' time? Then I remembered my mother's recent eye operation. On Monday, she went into hospital, and under anesthesia, they slit open the front part of her eye, pulled it back, and inserted a new lens. Once the lens was in, they put the front flap back. Then on Wednesday, she went back to the doctor, and he took off her eye patch. Her eye had healed perfectly, and she could see. Only 2 days later, all new eyes in only 2 days. So I knew what Chopra was saying was not just scientific theory. It was demonstrable fact. But it still never ceases to fill me with wonder at how amazing the infinite intelligence inside the body is, and how quickly the body can regenerate its cells. He then went on to ask, if you get a whole new liver every 6 weeks, why is it that if you have liver cancer in January, it's still there in June? Your liver would have regenerated itself several times by then. All the cells would be entirely new. The audience sat dumbfounded by the question. Then Chopra went on to explain that stored inside our cells are old memories. He called them phantom memories. These old memories can eventually cause degenerative disease patterns within our cells. And before a disease cell dies, it passes its memory on to the next cell being born. So the disease pattern continues. He likened the human body to a computer, saying it was possible to interrupt the programming. And once the programming was interrupted, the possibility for healing existed. He intimated that in order to interrupt the programming and uncover the cell memories and let them go, you would need to get in touch with the same part of you that had created the programming in the first place, the infinite intelligence, the body wisdom. And he suggested that those people who know how to get in touch with this body wisdom, to get into the gap, the quantum soup, these were the successful survivors of disease. He said it was his observation that everyone got to it in their own way, some spontaneously, some by choice, and suggested that the possibility existed for everyone, that it was part of the quantum mechanics of the way the body healed. He confirmed in theory what had not only been my own direct personal experience, but also what I had witnessed working with people over the years. When his lecture was done, I thought about going up to him and saying, you know, I'm exactly like all those hundreds of case studies you've documented. I underwent a similar process. But then I grew shy and I thought, he's heard it all. It would only be old hat to him. But I did wonder why he hadn't come up with a step-by-step process to give people. He is a medical doctor, and I guess his job at the time was observing, correlating, and recording, presenting to us the overwhelming evidence that healing at a cellular level isn't simply a theory. It is proven and documented. And the benefit he was providing to humankind through his immense research and care is immeasurable. When I got back from Mastery, I felt haunted by Tony's challenge. Something about it just wouldn't leave me alone. I felt so selfish. Why wasn't I willing to reach out to people and share my experience with them? I realized that many people might benefit from being at least pointed in a direction that could possibly work for them. Not only that, but alongside being a master trainer and seminar leader, I had been giving private one-to-ones for over 10 years, serving people and letting go of all kinds of emotional issues. I've been trained in neuro-linguistic programming, neuroassociative conditioning, nutrition, kinesiology, iridology, medical hypnosis, and so many other forms of alternative therapy. And for many years of caring deeply and working closely with people, I had an intuitive wisdom that served me in helping them become free. So what was holding me back? Why, when service was my life, was I keeping it to myself? When I checked inside to see what was really bothering me, I wondered, how can I teach someone else how to get in touch with what Chopra calls the gap or the quantum soup? It's not enough to talk about the infinite intelligence. You have to experience it firsthand. For me, it had been a direct experience. I felt it was not something you could teach someone. It is something your soul teaches you. How could I explain that mystery to someone else? And more important, how could I help others connect with the deepest part of themselves and directly experience it? I began to wonder, when I'd first spontaneously experienced this timeless awareness, and whether everyone might have at least glimpsed it at one time or another. Instantly, I flashed to a memory of me at an early age. It must have been 6 or 7, and I remembered lying in the grass in the front of my house. My mind became completely immersed in my own private world of grass and dirt and bugs. I examined each blade of grass, noticing the tiny striated segments, and could even see the very cells in each blade. The dirt was emanating a warm, humid, earthy smell. The grass was fragrant, and I became riveted in my little kingdom. My mind became utterly focused and came to a complete standstill. And in that moment of absolute stillness, it seemed as if time itself stood still. I found myself immersed in a bath of peace. The grass seemed to shimmer with an intense beauty. Everything scintillated and was bursting with life. It seemed as if only a moment had gone by when I heard my mother's voice calling me in to dinner. I realized that at least an hour must have slipped away as I had somehow dropped into the gap. My soul had quietly revealed itself to my innocent child self. Then my mind wandered to the various other times in my life that this vast silence of being had revealed itself to me. I realized that often the soul flashes forth at the most unexpected moments. Oddly, I flashed to a time I'd gone to see a baseball game. It was in New York City in Yankee Stadium. Cars were lining up for miles to get in, and the fumes were noxious. It was a hot summer's day in the Bronx, and tempers were flaring. I wondered, why am I doing this? This is crazy. All this hassle just to see a man with a bat hit a ball? No, I thought. That's not why I go to a ballpark. There's something special that happens at a baseball game, something I can't explain. I remembered getting into the stands, kids running all around, candy popcorn all over the seats, spilled Coca-Cola and sticky old beer on the floor, chewing gum on the backs of the seats. Some kid from the upper rafters poured a beer over the balcony onto the guy next to me. Kid thought it was hilarious. Guy was fuming. Then the game started, and a hush went through the audience, and we stood to sing the national anthem. A guy at the end of our row quickly broke the mood. He was drunk and began hurling obscenities at the opposing team, spilling his popcorn. Two chairs down, another guy got pissed off and started yelling at him to shut up. And so the brawl began. All this and the game had not yet even started. Once again, I wondered, what was I doing here, putting up with this stuff on a sweltering summer's night? And once again, some inner knowing reminded me that something special happens at a ballpark. Some magic would happen. I should stick it out. And the moment came. The pitcher wound up and threw the ball. It seemed to happen in slow motion. The whole crowd became hushed as the ball approached the batter, poised, keenly alert, ready to hit the ball. Then it was as if the stadium took a breath together. One breath. Utter stillness. All minds and hearts absolutely riveted on the ball. Time stood still. Then whack! The bat sending the ball soaring into the outfield, hair standing on end. Ripples of ecstasy and joy flowing all over, pealing with laughter, cheering for joy. Magic. A simple but common moment in a normal, everyday sports game. But what had made it so magical? A ball hitting a bat? I don't think so. What was it about that moment that made it so special? I played the whole scene over again in my head, only this time I slowed it down. Ball comes. Everyone and everything stops. Mind comes to a complete standstill. And in that gap of absolute silence, the soul flashes forth, an immensity revealing itself, a presence of vastness, a greatness that can't be explained, and then whack! Ball hit, hair standing on end. Something great had revealed itself in that tiny instant. One heart, one breath, hair on end. We dropped into the gap for an instant. And this vast truth had, in a flash, revealed itself. It's no wonder we love to go to sports events. All of us have probably been to a game of cricket or a football match and had the experience when it seemed as if for a moment everything came to a standstill while the crowd was held in suspense and for an instant an unexplainable energy arose from inside, making our hair stand on end. Isn't it true we secretly wait for that magic moment? We know it may only happen for one tiny instant, but it'll be worth putting up with all the rest of it. Then my mind flashed to another experience of sorts, to my first honeymoon night with Bob. We'd bought tickets to see Rudolf Nureyev in the ballet Romeo and Juliet at the Metropolitan Opera House. At that time, Nureyev was already a legend. He was at his absolute peak. Once again, there was a moment where it seemed as if time stood still. It was as if Nureyev reached into the very depths of his soul, into genius itself. He leapt into the air, and his legs spread into a full split. Then, for a moment, it was as if he lifted even higher, as if he was practically floating in the air. Once again, the whole audience drew a breath, one heart, hair on end. Ripples of causeless joy spread through the theater. It was as if, in the moment Nureyev tapped into his inner genius, the same thing in all of us instantly recognized itself. Our own greatness flashed forth. We'd seen ourselves in the mirror. No way to explain it, but it had been undeniable, palpable. Everyone got it at the same time. Self-recognition. When Nureyev came out for his bows, we all just leapt to our feet. Tears streaming, hands clapping, clapping, clapping. We just couldn't thank this man enough. We kept him coming back for 43 minutes of a huge outpouring of cheering and ovations. I know, because we missed our dinner reservations. My hands were purple, and yet I couldn't stop applauding. I was so grateful to this man for tapping into his soul. And mainly, I was thankful that the genius inside me had remembered itself. Have you ever had that experience at the end of an exceptional play or concert, where you felt yourself swept along by the beauty of the music, and your sense of separate self dropped away? Or perhaps you've had that experience in nature. Have you ever stood on a mountaintop, awed by the vastness? Or found you're being hushed by the beauty of a sunset by the sea? Or perhaps you've had the experience of skiing out of your mind, feeling like a river flowing down the slopes, completely at one with the mountain, and lost in a flow that intrinsically knew how and where to turn. All of us must have had this kind of experience at one point in our lives. Perhaps you've had the experience of being swept along by the flowing rhythm of the music while dancing, and found your mind was no longer directing your feet, that they seemed to have a life of their own. I realized that there were so many times I dropped into source spontaneously. Yet the challenge still lay before me. How to help others have a direct, sustained experience of this? The soul had chosen such times to reveal its boundless expansion, but how to tap into that by choice? And then, how to help someone else remain in a sustained experience of it long enough to be able to go through a healing process? How to help someone directly experience this boundlessness, this peace, this eternal love? How to help someone discover for themselves that this has always been and would always be who they really are? That it is who they are in their essence, in the very core of their being, and that as soon as the mind gets out of its own way, the real self would be revealed. How to help someone realize that there is no need to turn to anyone or anything outside, that this power, this consciousness, this presence of love, this oneness that is whole, silent, and keenly aware, call it what you will, is your own true nature. How could I assist someone in discovering something that only they can discover and directly experience personally? I knew that no amount of words could capture it, that the best that words could do was point at it, but that the experience of it could only come from experience itself, from the boundless greatness revealing itself. I thought, everyone must have glimpsed this truth at some point or another in their life, surely. Their minds had to have been arrested at some point or another. How could you have watched Torvald and Dean skating to Bolero on their way to the Olympic gold and not had a moment of riveted stillness, absolute awe, when the inner genius revealed itself? Perhaps you may have heard Winston Churchill passionately assert, "We will fight them on the beaches," or John F. Kennedy proclaim, "Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country." Or Martin Luther King exclaim, "I have a dream." Or Neil Armstrong transmit from the moon, "That may be one small step for man, but it's a giant leap for mankind." Moments when truth itself spoke, and then truth inside you recognized itself. So often when someone taps into that inner genius, into the truth, Something inside us stirs, the hair stands on end, and an inner yes is felt, truth recognizing itself. But how to get truth to recognize itself? By choice. So I stopped giving therapies for a while, until I could find a way to give someone a sustained experience of their true self. I felt I wouldn't be serving people at their deepest level. And I knew it was when the emotional issues are addressed at the deepest level, at the level of the soul, of consciousness itself, that you really get to the core of the issue. It's then that true freedom, emotionally as well as physically, can take place. Then real healing begins. Mine had been a spiritual journey, one of letting go into freedom. The result had been healing at a very physical, cellular level. The evidence was unmistakable, and yet I couldn't touch or test or even explain the unexplainable power and mystery of the soul. So the prayer continued to go out. I wanted to be guided to find a way to help others experience it themselves. I wanted to assist them in healing on all levels, not just the physical, but also the emotional and spiritual. As I didn't have the answers, I thought it best to continue my own personal spiritual journey and put my quest to help others have a sustained experience of Source on the back burner. I decided to trust that if I was meant to help others somehow, a way would be revealed. Several months later, when I least expected it, the answer was profoundly revealed. I was given a direct experience of Source so enormous that the full realization of it has not left me since that day. Source has been present as the undercurrent of my life ever since.